Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. And tonight, as you who follow us know, we are actually on the air after being off for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday because Blog Talk was hacked for prime time. Now the issue is they say that they're having a problem with the chat room, so the chat will be inactive. If this is true and you wanted to have a question you want to put in chat during the second half hour, just PM me at Facebook or just call in to 718-664-6436, and we will get right to you.
As our guests, and what we will be discussing today is a very, very extremely important subject, and we will be discussing how our constitutional rights, our human rights, and our civil rights, how they are eroding under this current political system that we have in this country. We keep electing politicians. President Obama was just elected a few months ago, and we elect individuals to represent us in Congress, in the House, in the Senate. But these representatives are not representing our best interests and also to protect our rights as citizens. And Alan, once again, I would like to welcome you to the program today.
Well, thanks for having me again, Stuart.
Alan, as I mentioned, we have a very important subject that we're dealing with today. What I want to do first, I want to discuss a little bit about this incident. I shouldn't say incident. It's actually a whole great magnitude in regards to a threat that it has to all of us, what took place in Boston. But we definitely condemn what took place, the bombing of innocent civilians as they were running the marathon there. But we believe that we still, as citizens, under the U.S. Constitution and under the Bill of Rights that we have, that we still should have protection under the law. One of the things that's been discussed just recently that's been all over the Internet is the person, the bomber, if he should be protected under the law with Miranda rights. I know that you have seen this also. Could you share with our listeners the importance of the Miranda right in our society?
Sure. It's not just the Miranda rights, though, that's at stake here. But the Miranda rights, this is where the police have to read you your rights, that you have the right to remain silent and that you have a right to an attorney. And what they've done, they want to place this guy under what they call federal custody. And at that point, they don't have to read you your Miranda rights. They don't have to give you any constitutional rights. They don't have to allow you to have an attorney. So there's a lot more that goes with this than just not having your Miranda rights read to you. And this is very dangerous because this has been done to a number of other people, including myself. In 2006, I was taken into this federal custody because the FBI and the Homeland Security were working with the RCMP and they wanted to serve me with a deportation order because the first deportation order from Canada wasn't any good. And they took me into federal custody. I had no right to call an attorney or anything. And this has happened to a number of other people. And a lot of people don't know that this is going on. It's happened to university students down in Iowa that were active in the peace movement. So this is nothing new, but it's being enforced more and more. And this is very dangerous. It's a complete, it's total ignoring the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. And they're running roughshod and trampling over the Constitution and Bill of Rights when they deny somebody their Miranda rights and take people into what they call federal custody. I tried to stand up. They put me in a chair, and I tried to stand up. I said, I'm calling my attorney. They shoved me back down. They said, you're not calling your attorney. I said, if I'm under arrest, I want to call my attorney. The Homeland Security people and FBI kept shoving me back in the chair and said, what don't you understand? You're not under arrest. You're in federal custody. When you're in federal custody, you have no right to an attorney. So, you know, this is the way these people operate. And it's becoming more and more prevalent in this country, and people aren't aware that it's taking place. And, you know, I talked to my U.S. senator at the time, who was Mark Dayton, who is now the governor. And, you know, he was just sort of flabbergasted. He said he didn't know what to do about it. And this is a United States senator. And what are people going to do when they keep doing this to people over and over and over again? How long are we going to allow this to continue? This guy is obviously a heinous criminal. It's pretty obvious he did what they're accusing of him, but that doesn't mean you deny somebody that their constitutional rights. If you deny one person, where does it ever stop?
Right. And part of what is taking place when you're talking about under federal authority, once a person is under federal authority, then they can definitely indefinitely detain this person and deny him many other rights that he deserves under the Constitution. That's what you're saying, correct?
Right. Well, I was held from 8:30 in the morning until almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon because I kept standing up so many times. They finally chained the chair that they had me sit in, and they chained it around the tire of my car and handcuffed me to the car, and they tied my dog to a flagpole with a logging chain. And this is the way they treat people. And if somebody wouldn't have
before
been...
Before they allowed you to call an attorney. Is that
they
correct?
They wouldn't allow me to call an attorney. They said, you're not under arrest. And I said, well, I'm going to leave then. And they said, no, what don't you understand? You're in federal under federal custody. And that's what they call this, federal
that
custody.
That sounds like you're under arrest.
Yeah. Well,
right.
You are. You can't go anyplace, but no charges were ever pressed. They just wanted to keep me in that one spot until the Canadian authorities came there to serve me with their deportation order. And, you know, a very stupid thing. And just think if they can do that to somebody like me over a deportation order from another country yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I didn't live 3 miles from the border, they probably wouldn't have done that. But this is the way the RCMP and Canada Immigration and the Homeland Security and the FBI all work together.
Well, Ellen,
you know,
a lot of this we have seen this starting to take place. It has taken place since 9/11, and 9/11 that was a threat. We looked at this as a threat to the entire nation, a threat to our freedoms. It was the nation was under attack. But now, when we look at this 12 years later, now our constitutional rights, our freedoms and our liberties, everything is under attack. Our freedoms as U.S. citizens are under attack. Years ago, we looked at ourselves as being some of the most fortunate people on the planet, because anything you say, well, it's my constitutional rights. And now it almost seems like since 9/11, since September the 11th of 2001, that we don't have any more rights or protection under the law, and it appears that Congress and this president and the president before, George Bush, they are rewriting the Constitution and our rights. I really don't even see the benefits now under the when you say my constitutional rights, other than it just being words. What?
Well, they're just words on a piece of paper.
It's just words on a piece of paper.
Enough, they're rewriting it. They're just totally ignoring the Constitution.
They're ignoring it.
Yeah.
And most of the U.S. citizens are young, are old people that you see day to day. They don't understand that this is what is happening. We're losing our rights day by day, minute by minute. Ellen, a few other things that we're going to discuss. It's a lot that we can discuss on this subject. And some of the things we're going to be talking about is just a piece of legislation that we just passed the House, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes. I still want to talk about some things that have taken place since 9/11, and what that is many of us know it by the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, but we're going to talk about that, and we're going to also talk about some recent legislation that was before the House, and of course it was just revised. But anyway, Ellen, what I want to talk about a little bit is some of the things we see every day. Last year, I was traveling around the country for the campaign for the Alexander Mendoza campaign. You fly on a frequent basis, all of us, almost every family or anyone within a short period of time, just to visit family, friends, we're traveling. And you probably remember, if you go back several years ago, approximately a decade ago, when they were doing the searches as you got ready to go onto a plane, the TSA, and we were outraged as citizens and saying our rights are being violated of this search. And now today, no one's saying anything. Are we becoming complacent and accepting our rights being violated just because it says it's to protect our rights and it's for anti-terrorism? Are we accepting this as a nation and being complacent?
Well, I think that this has been a problem ever since the creation of this country and the creation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Even Thomas Jefferson lamented the fact that the press was the journalists at that time were being censored. And he said he'd rather have journalists that were reporting the news, even if they weren't quite accurate, than no journalists at all or journalists that were being censored. And in this country today, we've got corporate journalism, which isn't informing the people of what's going on, so people don't really have an understanding of what they have to do to defend their rights. Throughout history, the poor people in this country, the Constitution has just been more or less words on a piece of paper. Any rights that they've received were the result of struggles, and it's no different today. We're going to have to struggle to defend our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. All of it, not just this or that amendment to the Bill of Rights or anything, but the entire thing, because this government is totally ignoring the Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's like they don't even exist to Obama and the Bushes of this world. So it's going to take a real struggle.
And how long would you say this has been going on? For decades? Within the last 12 years or so? Or did you say since the Constitution? Pardon me?
Since 1776, it's been going on.
Okay.
And,
so it's gone on under every president.
But I mean, it's gotten a lot worse. They use 9/11 as the excuse to intensify beating down people's rights, and rather than 9/11 should have been used to expand people's rights, because after all, if you think about it, the only real defense we have against terrorism or any kind of threat is when people understand what's going on. And they're doing just the opposite. They're making it so people don't have access to any kind of information. And without information and without a free exchange of ideas, we're not going to have a defense against anything. The problem is the FBI and the CIA and these people, they're creating the terrorists to start with. And then they're using, once these terrorist acts are committed, the bombings and everything, then they use that to take away our rights even further, so we have even less protection against these kinds of dirty deeds.
And, back to this TSA thing, which is I find very interesting. A young lady, this was probably around 6 months or so ago, and she objected to the TSA agent doing a search, I think, on her 7 or 8 year old daughter, and she didn't do anything other than she spoke against it. She said she objected to her daughter being searched, and they arrested her for that. And we have seen numerous cases, including one I saw a lady. She thought that she was being searched inappropriately, and she pushed the lady's hand away. And once she did that, she was arrested for that. But this seems like a complete violation for a person just to speak because you're concerned about your daughter being searched. To be arrested, that's not a terrorist act. That's just being a parent.
Right. What goes with the denial of and taking away people's rights is a real arrogance. And that's what we're experiencing in this country right now by the police, by Homeland Security, by the FBI. They've just become totally arrogant. They think that they can do whatever they want, that they don't have to respect the Constitution because that's the signal that, that they've been given. And these people are just totally arrogant.
I just want to get back to this situation in Boston just that happened this past week. And obviously they were trying to apprehend, capture and apprehend the dangerous suspect, but I believe it was like a 20-block area that they the police came and seized that complete community, and many of the houses were actually people were brought out at gunpoint, and the complete neighborhood was under siege. Is this a violation, in your opinion? I know you're not an attorney, but in your opinion, that to me seems like it's a violation of individual rights.
Well, I've just been hearing about this. I haven't seen it yet, but I understand that there's some videos of this and stuff where the police did what you say. And,
I've seen the videos. The videos are right online.
Yeah, I haven't seen them yet. But, you know, I would say that, that the police are going to be facing some big, fat lawsuits over this. And people are very foolish if they, you know, don't file lawsuits over this. And this is the kind of thing that people have to do to stand up for their rights. The police had no right to do this to all these people. I hear now that it's dozens and dozens of people that the police actually invaded their homes and pointed guns at their kids and everything. And that there's no excuse for that at all. You know, they were after two people. One of them was dead. And, you know, they go after bank robbers and stuff all the time. Do they do that to whole neighborhoods? No.
Oh, no.
You know, what they've done is they're preparing the soil for fascism in this country. And this was sort of, they used this as sort of a test case, in my opinion. You know, I've never seen anything like this done in this country before, and I don't think other people have either. During the riots of the 60s and stuff, the police acted a lot like that. But even then, they didn't do the kinds of things in the very, you know, methodical way that they went about doing this. And if they start doing this all over the country, you know, what kind of country are we going to have? People kill people in this country and stuff every day. Does that mean now that the police are going to go and cordon off whole neighborhoods and do these kinds of searches and stuff? You know,
One of the things I was concerned with, what was that?
I said eventually when the police are doing this kind of thing, somebody's going to get killed. You know, some cop's going to think that, oh, you know, somebody's pulling a gun on them or something, and they'll shoot somebody, you know?
Right, so it actually presents itself as a threat to the community.
Sure.
Well, what I was surprised is when you go day-to-day within your communities and you don't realize that you see a patrol car, black and white, here and there going up and down the street. At least we do here in California. I should say every block we see them here in California. But we see this. And then you have that incident that took place in Boston, and then you realize that the police department is not like a police department. They're like an army. I mean, they came out with tanks and gear and stuff that I would think that I would see in Afghanistan, and here they have this, like, right down the street from where we live. Alan, what are they, preparing for war?
Yeah, they are. They're preparing for war against the people. I mean, we see that in what the FBI has done with Occupy Wall Street, and the police and the government of this country is very afraid of its own people, and they should be, because everything this government is doing is exactly the opposite of what the people want done. So they're very afraid of the people at this point. And I really think what the whole meaning of the way the police operated there in Boston was a warning and a practice test to see how far they could go and what they could get away with.
Now, Alan, what I see, something that we take for granted every day, individuals are walking on the street, they're talking on their cell phones, they're texting constantly, they're using the internet, they're sending emails, they're using their phones for transmitting data. And we're living in an electronic age here. And when all this was taking place in Boston just last week, we see that very quietly the House of Representatives slipped in and passed the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, and now it's going on to the Senate, and chances are it'll be quickly signed into law by the president. Initially, let me just expand on that just a little bit. We saw the Stop Online Privacy Act, which was the initial piece of legislation that we saw that was being introduced, and then it was slipped in very silently, as I mentioned, with the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. Could you share with our listeners the when we talk about just taking something so for granted, talking on our cell phones, sharing information over the internet, could you share the importance of how in an age of information and sharing information, and sometimes when we just click on a link and share it with someone else, could you share the importance of legislation such as this that's not even brought openly to the American public, but you have a Congress just that signs legislation like this right into law, or vote legislation like this into law, and a president that has been so complicit and going along with this type of madness. Can you explain the ramifications of such legislation?
Well, what this legislation is really all about, it's sort of hard to tell exactly what it's about if you read it. It's a very complicated piece of legislation. But for all practical purposes, what it means is that if you're on the internet and you're surfing the web and doing research or anything, they can keep track of everything that you're doing and report that'll be reported and recorded and go to the FBI or Homeland Security. If you go to a website about revolution or something, they're going to record that. There'll be they can hone in on certain code words and stuff, and all that will be sent to a center. You have all these telephone companies that are now they're backing this legislation, Verizon and all these companies, AT&T, all these internet companies, they're all backing this CISPA.
And I might mention all.
All of them, yeah.
Right.
And there's no disagreement between any of them. They want to become one with the government and feed the government all this information. The government wants all the information on us, but the government doesn't want to provide the people with any information. So, they'll know exactly what people are reading. You can get books on the internet now, so they'll know what you've been reading. They'll know who you've been talking to and what you've been saying on Facebook and everything else, although they probably do a lot of that now, even though it's illegal. But they'll be able to get people's emails. They'll have certain code words where they'll be able to, if an email is going through the network, through the internet, it'll detect a certain code word and pull that email out. This is a terrible thing. This has nothing to do with democracy. We've been hearing all along, the internet is going to expand democracy. Isn't that what we've been told? And
right,
now
that's what we've been told, but it's doing just the opposite.
Just the opposite. And now it's going to put a damper, a serious damper on democracy. And people will not even want to communicate with each other. I already have people that they're afraid to talk to me on the telephone because they figure my phone is bugged.
It is.
It is, yeah. I mean, I've got documents that show the apps on my telephone. So I know that it's bugged. But, I mean, it's putting a total damper on democracy. Somebody lives 2 miles away, you got to go talk to them in person. They don't want to talk to you on the telephone. And this is a terrible thing. Not only that, but it's not only the government now and the FBI and the CIA and the National Security Agency and military intelligence. We've got all these private detective agencies doing the same thing. The whole thing with Rupert Murdoch over there in England was just the tip of the iceberg. These people know how, these private detective agencies, they know how to tap into your telephone. They know how to access your emails. This guy, Richard Mellon Scaife, runs a whole operation where he's just going after all these left-wing people and he's tapping into their emails and tapping their telephones and everything else. And this is all done privately without the government even being involved. You know,
well, very interesting
that
you mentioned about these private investigative services. When you look at the Boston Marathon and what was taking place there, and much of the information gathering and the surveillance that was being provided, that was by a private security firm.
Right.
The law enforcement services of Boston. That was private security. And like you said, what they were doing is they report information back to the government where they can be able to access that information as they consider appropriate.
Right. And what shows that the government isn't even doing the proper things to start with, you know, the FBI and everybody, Obama talks about protecting the American people. Well, the information that the FBI had wasn't even used to protect the people in Boston because, you know, while the FBI was probably spying on some peace organizations and stuff, these guys were walking around with bombs, and they knew from 2 years ago already that these guys were planning some kind of thing like this, and they let these guys walk around. But I'll bet you anything, at that very time that these guys were walking around free carrying their bombs around, the FBI was out spying on some pacifist peace organizations over there in Boston, of which there are a number. You know, and this is all, this isn't far-fetched. I mean, all this is documented through FBI files and everything else, what they do. They're watching the wrong people.
Exactly. Hey, Alan, I want to get into a little bit more about some of our rights and freedoms and other things that can even have a broader ramification of what has taken place. I might mention once again that we have Alan Mackey. He joins our program once every other week, and he shared with our listeners a lot of valuable information in regards to the system that we live in today, how that system, things that we could do to have a better way of living here, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. But also we discussed things in regards to socialism, and also capitalism. But today we're dealing with a very important subject about the threats that we're facing, the threats against our constitutional rights, our human rights, and our civil rights. And Alan, once again, I'd like to welcome you to our program today.
Yep, thanks for having me. You know, one thing we should talk about maybe is the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the international community recognizes the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights as something that's not to be violated at all. It's something that's held in high esteem. And here in this country, we don't even hear these words, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, very seldom mentioned. You know, and this
can
is
you explain to our listeners a little bit more about that so they can understand the background on that, Alan?
Sure. In 1948, coming out of World War II, when people were concerned about fascism, all the countries in the world got together and said, we need some kind of declaration of human rights in order to be able to use as kind of a measuring stick to determine if countries start going too far towards fascism and repression and everything. So they developed the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights that specifically gives people the right to have the personal opinions and views of their choice without facing repression. It goes as far as saying that that people are guaranteed a job and a living wage, and that people are guaranteed health care and social security in old age. But it, essentially what it does is it takes like our Bill of Rights and makes it very specific what kind of rights are protected, and there's about 30 rights under the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And essentially, you know, this country is just ignoring that document. It's ignoring the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, just like it's ignoring our own Constitution and our own Bill of Rights.
It's just a piece of paper, as far as
they're
concerned.
It's just a piece of paper. And the thing of it is, all of this, I mean, really there's no way to enforce it unless people come together and insist that those rights be enforced. If people just sit by and let these cops get away with what they're doing, you know, right there you've given up your rights. And what happened in Boston, if people don't fight back, if people don't file lawsuits, we're going to be the cops all over this country are going to think they can do the same thing anytime somebody does anything they don't like.
Well, Alan, you know, there's various, you mentioned the Bill of Rights, and there's various things under the Bill of Rights which are definitely in, you know, the rights of this, the citizens of this nation have been violated. For the most part, though, the one right that you see most people being vocal about is the Second Amendment, when it talk about their rights to bear arms. What is the importance of the Second Amendment and people's rights to bear arms? And one question we brought up in another program, it wasn't with you, what type of arms should people have a right to bear? I mean, what are the limits? Sometimes I wonder what should be the limits for our local municipalities and police agencies, but what should be the limits as far as the rights to bear arms? Because I believe people deserve that right under the Constitution. Could you explain
I think the Constitution gives us that right under the Second Amendment. However,
Second Amendment.
On the other hand, I think it's sort of irrelevant whether a person owns a gun or not. And I'm not anti-gun. I'm a hunter and everything, and I also own guns to protect myself because I have these right-wing nuts threatening me all the time. And my kids were shot at by a group called the Michigan Militia back in the 1980s. But the reason I don't put a lot of emphasis on it myself is because we see what happened in Boston. I mean, even if you had a gun in your house, you probably would have ended up dead if you would have pulled it out. And so the right to own
An arm. Innocent people would have been, they would have been probably assaulted just because they pulled out their gun out, especially around that time.
Yeah, and like a lot of times they send, these plainclothes vice cops and everything, and people say, well, what the heck, who's trying to break into my house? And they pull out a gun and because they think some crook's trying to break into their house, and they end up getting full of bullet holes. You know, this is happening all over the country with the police. A lot of times the police even serve in serving a warrant. I read about it all the time where they go to the wrong house and kick in doors and the people get afraid and that somebody's got a gun beside their bed and they pull it out. And before you know it, the cops fill them full of bullet holes. You know, so the right to bear arms, that's a right we should insist on defending. But at the same time, it means very little when you got such a powerful government with police agencies and police that are so arrogant that, they don't even take the time to find out if they're serving a warrant at the right home or anything. And,
Should there be any limitations on the types of, when we say the right to bear arms, but let's take it to another degree when we talk about police.
Because I'm not a real gun fan. I own hunting weapons.
Right. Well, I'm gonna move a little bit away from that. But I mean, when we look at what is taking place with the local municipalities and police agencies, I mean, are they taking this a little bit too far where, you know, the types of armament that you see that they're using that are just right in the streets, is it just taking it too far here in the during these years, Alan?
Well, I think that we have to take the guns away, the bad guns away from the police and the military to start with. And
good point. Very good point.
Very few people have access to the kind of militarized weapons that they could actually use if, you know, we had to have defend ourselves against these people. I mean, the firepower that these people have is so overwhelming. Just little police departments. I mean, even little police departments with four, five, six cops in a small community, they are so well-armed, people don't stand a chance against them. And, you know, when you're just talking firepower. So it's sort of irrelevant. The Second Amendment has become irrelevant because I don't think that the founders of this country ever intended to have a police force that was so repressive as what we have now. And that's the issue, in my opinion.
What about the First Amendment? How relevant is that? We see what took place during the Occupy movement. I mean, people were exercising their rights and freedoms, which they should have been able to do that. The right to peaceably assemble, I mean, to petition the government. What about their First Amendment rights?
Right, that's the most important right that we have in this country as far as I'm concerned. And once people lose those rights, like people lost those rights during Occupy Wall Street, it means that the people don't even have a voice. Not even talking about changing the form of government or the system that we have, but just talking about the problems that we have. This is what the government of this country objected to, the Occupy Wall Street people. They were only talking about the problems we have in this country, and the government of this country sent the FBI in, hundreds of FBI agents, into the Occupy Wall Street movement to infiltrate it and wreak havoc with it and destroy it. And this was their intent. They weren't looking for anybody doing anything illegal. They were looking to intimidate people. They were looking to change the nature of the movement and subvert the movement. So, you know, this is what the FBI was doing. Completely illegal, in my opinion. I don't know why there hasn't been a major lawsuit over this already. The FBI should be facing a billion-dollar lawsuit over what they did.
I was going to say multi-billion.
Yeah.
Because they violated the rights of hundreds of thousands of citizens across the country.
There's no evidence that anybody in Occupy Wall Street was doing anything illegal or planning to do anything illegal. In fact, all the evidence points that the FBI was sending in provocateurs to try and encourage violence so they could say that Occupy Wall Street was violent. And they did the same thing here in Minnesota during the Republican National Convention. When was that? I think 8 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. 8 years ago.
Something like that. Anyways, it was a while back. Anyways, the FBI and the police and the Minnesota Public Safety Commission, they actually hired these provocateurs to try and entice people into being violent so they could say that they were violent. And they had to drop the charges against everybody that they arrested because it was exposed that they did this. They brought in these provocateurs. And, you know, these are police agencies that are supposed to be trying to prevent violence that are instigating violence and that are wrecking our movements. I mean, we should have massive movements in this country against what's going on with these wars, with the injustices in this country, with the unemployment. But they've got people afraid. You talk to a lot of people. Yeah, and they'll tell you, if we start doing something, are we going to lose our jobs? We don't want the FBI harassing us. We don't want the FBI going and talking to our employer. You know, what kind of country have we become when the government of this country won't let the people of this country express their opinions and try and find solutions to their problems? This is a terrible situation. And then on top of that, we have an entire Congress, every single one of these people in Congress, they won't listen to what the people want. They do just the opposite. Anybody can look at any poll. You can go out on the street and talk to people, and you can find out that people of this country, they want peace, and they want their tax dollars spent for human needs. And the government of this country does just the opposite. And when people complain, they write a letter to the editor, and the first thing you know, the letter to the editor winds up in an FBI file.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why this Congress has a 12% approval rating by the people of this country. They elect them into office, and then afterwards they know that they will not be speaking for them. One of the other pieces of legislation, Alan, when you're talking about our First Amendment rights, would be the Federal Restricted Building and Grounds Improvement Act. And many people, including many of those that were demonstrating around the time of Occupy Wall Street, many of them were arrested and were now being tried as felons because of the violation of that particular law, of that particular act. And this is something
They say you can protest, but you go to the federal buildings, the places of power, and you hold up a sign, and now you can be arrested.
A felon
doing that.
Yeah, all you have to do is, I was talking to an individual in Santa Cruz. This was during when I was campaigning last year, and he said he was on a federal court, and he was holding a sign there in front of the court, and he was arrested, and now he has been charged. He was charged and is still in court on felony charges.
Well, I went to the federal building And in Wisconsin, I went to a federal building, and I had a button on that said, it was a peace button anyways. I forgot exactly what it said. Anyways, they told me I had to take my button off. I said, why? And they said, because it's against the law to displace a button like that with that message in a federal building.
So it was against the law. In other words, if you kept that on, you're in danger of being arrested for that.
I would be, I'd either be arrested or they wouldn't let me in the building. I mean, you got to go through this whole metal detector to get in the building. I guess they just wouldn't have let me in the building. I don't know if I would have been arrested or not. But I had to put my little button, it was about a 2-inch button, I had to put it in a little plastic basket, and they said you can pick it up on your way out. I mean, this is nothing but outright intimidation of the American people, and it's going on day in and day out. They didn't know who I was or anything. They weren't picking on me to pick on me. They were saying that you can't wear that button with that message on in a United States federal building.
Alan, explain to our listeners some of the ramifications of the National Defense Authorization Act and also the act that took place just prior to that, which was the Patriot Act. But these are two very important pieces of legislation that were signed into law by this president, a constitutional scholar. But what are some of the ramifications of NDAA?
Well, the main ramification that's going to do a lot of harm is that they can detain people indefinitely. And really, the way that this whole law was rammed through is, I mean, that in itself was a disgrace and it's the most undemocratic methods. I talked to Senator Carl Levin, who was a big mover in this National Defense Authorization Act, and he told me, don't worry. We've changed the legislation that you're concerned about. This is what Carl Levin told me in a personal telephone conversation. He said, don't worry. We've changed that. The part of the legislation that you're concerned about, the indefinite detentions and everything, he says, that's been removed. So, and that was about 3 days before he voted for the piece of legislation where that was still in it. This is the way
we still
lie. You know, what kind of democracy is that where a member of the United States Senate has to lie to somebody that calls them concerned about a piece of legislation?
Right, especially the wording in the legislation.
Yeah, and all this legislation, the wording, I mean, even a lawyer can't understand most of it, but they word it in such a way that they can use it however they want. And that's the main problem with all this legislation that's being passed right now that's limiting people's rights. They word it in such a way that they can do whatever they want and turn it into whatever they want. And if you want to fight them after they do something to you, then you got to spend thousands of dollars trying to sue them.
Now, when we look at the various our Bill of Rights and we look at the Sixth Amendment, it says all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial. And we see under the National Defense Authorization Act, that's not the case.
No, they can hold you indefinitely without a trial and without even seeing an attorney.
In case if anyone don't understand what indefinite means, that as long as they want, without giving you a trial, you're not even entitled to a trial under the NDAA. And that's a severe threat right there in itself. Alan, how do we confront this? Because this has become bigger than anything that we have. Well, like you say, it's been there since for the last 300 years, 250 years. But this is really big. How do people even confront this? I mean, because we're not organized as citizens. And most of us are busy texting and reading our Facebook, and we're completely clueless as to what's going on. Where do we start?
Well, we're going to have to do what they've done over the years in this country, what working people have done, and we're going to have defense organizations established, committees to defend the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights to start with, as far as I can see. You know, organizations like the ACLU are supposed to be doing this, but they do absolutely nothing as far as I can see. But people are going to have to establish grassroots organizations saying that, you know, we have an organization to defend the Bill of Rights in the United States Constitution, and we're going to have to get lawyers that start suing the government when they're doing these things to the people. I don't understand all these things are getting by without any lawsuits or anything against the government. I've never heard of anything like this. If this stuff was happening back in the 1960s and 1970s, these police would be facing lawsuits left and right. When you know, we a citizens group got together and sued the Michigan State Police back in 1974, the Michigan State Police and the local police in Michigan for having these red squads, and we won. Eventually, over 400 people became plaintiffs in this lawsuit after we started the lawsuit with about a dozen people. But these are the kinds of things that we have to be doing in this country. The courts, they have never worked for the benefit of the people, but if enough people get together and make enough noise, these judges, they pay attention. They want to make it look like they're fair. And it's important for the people to get their messages out that our rights are being violated, or otherwise the judges and the police are going to ignore us completely. And right now we don't have any of that kind of resistance in this country. We don't have the resistance in the courts, and we don't have the resistance in the streets. Even during McCarthyism, a lot of people don't know this, but during the McCarthy hearings, a lot of those hearings, thousands of people demonstrated. They had to have police to block the door so people couldn't get in. And the hearing rooms were surrounded by thousands of people protesting the McCarthy hearings. Well, why aren't we having these kind of protests when the government is passing these laws right now? That, you know, there should be massive demonstrations in Washington. There should be massive demonstrations at federal buildings to show that.
And then they'll be arrested, Alan.
What?
And then everyone will be arrested.
Well, we're going to have to take that.
It's sort of a revolving door there. They should be demonstrating. They should be speaking out, and then all of them will be arrested.
Yeah, well, the jails can only hold so many people.
That's true.
You know, if we don't do this, I mean, you always have to take the chance of being arrested if you want to stand up
right.
for your rights.
Well, no, they
I
should
mean,
be arrested, but
I can remember coming out of McCarthyism in the mid-60s, passing out leaflets on a street corner, and you couldn't pass out a leaflet against the Vietnam War at that time without being arrested. A cop would come and tell you, you got to stop. You're blocking the sidewalk. If you don't stop, we're going to arrest you. You know, and I was arrested. Thousands of people across this country on college campuses and everything were arrested for doing the same thing, just passing out a leaflet or a newspaper. And you got to take the chance, and you got to take the chance that you're going to be arrested. I mean, what's the big deal? You go sit in a jail. I mean, it's no real big deal, you know. And
Alan,
once they arrest enough people, then you have a movement, and you can oppose what these people are doing. That's the way it works. That's what resistance is about.
Alan, another very important area that we need to cover this evening would be gay marriage. Proposition 8, we were dealing with that here in California. The rights for same-sex marriage couples to marry, and now that has gone to the Supreme Court. But we believe, you know, let's talk a little bit about the LGBT and Q rights, because that's something, even in a lot of the discussions on our program, we don't discuss that. But how is that, even as a right for many of the people that are here on this planet, how is those rights for those individuals, how are those rights being ignored here in this country by our legislators and by our courts? And things like this, in my opinion, shouldn't even have to go through the whole court process before we legalize that. And also the rights, I'm going to speak because we only have a few minutes, the other one is the rights for people to be able to, for marijuana, just in two states just recently. That was in Colorado and also in Washington, where it has been legalized. But in my opinion, that's a human right. Well, we should be able to do that in any state without the fear of prosecution. But speak on those two things. First of all, gay marriage, and the rights of individuals, and also people being able to freely enjoy, you know, smoking marijuana, cannabis.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with either one of them. It's always been my opinion as far as, you know, I'm not concerned who people love. I'm more concerned about the people that are killing people in wars and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it's all part of the repression of this country to try and force people and coerce people to live the way certain people want society to be. And that's always the way the rich want it. But, you know, when you talk about laws against gay people and stuff, you know, one of the biggest hypocrites was J. Edgar Hoover.
Right.
And,
exactly.
This shows the real hypocrisy in this country, where you had the head of the FBI, you know, he was a cross-dresser and held hands with his friend Tolson and everything. And but here was a guy that would take gay people and blackmail them to inform on their friends and neighbors and stuff when it came to the whole Red Squad hearings and everything else. And this is the total hypocrisy of this country. Everything, they want to make things illegal because it's easy to repress people that way. If somebody's been smoking marijuana and it's against the law, you got something to hold over their head.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the whole the welfare system where you have to report every penny that you get. Well, I know a guy that went and picked up some pop cans and turned them in to get the 10 cents for the can, and the welfare found out about that some way. And they charged them. They actually charged him with a violation of the welfare laws by saying that he didn't report that. And it was like $3. But they just wanted to use that as repression over him to coerce him into you know, doing what they say that he had to do. And it's the same thing with all these laws, with whether it's laws against gay people or laws against marijuana. These are just things. I mean, they're foolish laws, you know. 20 years from now, people are going to look at it and say, geez, why did this country have such laws? You know, so stupid. But yet, if you look back in our history, there were all kinds of stupid laws. I mean, look at the runaway slave law. What could be more stupid than a law against a slave running away to freedom? You know, and yet that was a law at one time in this country. And, you know, it just, you can go on and on and on. At one time, that it was a law to... you know, sign a union card in a lot of states in this country. You know, and we look at that today and say, oh, that's stupid. Yeah, but a lot of people, thousands of people were repressed under using laws like that. And it's the same thing with marijuana or, you know, gay marriage. This country always wants, the government of this country always wants something to hold as a club over people's heads. And
you know,
that's
some
the way
of,
look at it.
Some of the things, and you mentioned they always have something to hold a club over your head. We look at the Trayvon Martin situation, at what took place in Florida, and
yeah.
Zimmerman, because the Zimmerman shooting him and killing him, a 16-year-old teenager, because he was wearing a hoodie. And, you know, in other words, you know, now it's being discussed, well, was he a suspect because he was wearing a hoodie? You know, one time I was walking on the streets in St. Pete's, Florida, and an individual pulled a gun on me because I was black, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was it? When the police showed up, I was at his door. He pulled a gun on me because, you know, he suspected, had some suspected me for being at his door. But for the most part, it was because I was black. But I stayed there until the police got there. And the police said, well, you know, you should understand. I mean, here you are, you know, black, mustache, walking around the neighborhood this time of night, and I was doing some political canvassing. But the thing is, why should someone pull a gun on you just because you're walking around the neighborhood and you're black, or you're going through a neighborhood because you have a hoodie on? And then we had to take it to the court. Well, it's understandable and put it before a jury because he had a hoodie on and he was black. And the same thing is, we look at classes and discrimination in this country because of someone's sexual orientation or because of the person, because of their color. But, you know, these are things that we speak against, the violation of people's rights and their civil rights, just because of traditions or things that are actually in violation of our constitutional rights. But part of what you're saying, Alan, and what I agree with you on, is, first of all, we need to be organized as a nation and start reclaiming our rights as citizens. But let me ask you this, Ellen. The Constitution is nothing more than just a piece of paper now in this country. And if it was actually a legitimate instrument, we would enjoy a lot more freedoms than what we have today. I want to ask you, Ellen, should the Constitution be rewritten here in the 21st century?
Well, I wouldn't trust the people that would be doing the rewriting at this point.
Good point.
If people were more mobilized and organized, it would be different. But try calling a constitutional convention. I know some of the right-wing groups are calling for a constitutional convention, and that would be a disaster as far as working people and people of color and other...
Right, things would be worse than what they are now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't think it's a matter of having to have a different constitution or a different Bill of Rights. We've got the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which this country has ratified, so we have that. We have the tools, but we're not using them.
Do we need a different Congress?
Well, we for sure need a whole new Congress. Every one of those people in that Congress got to go.
And, do we need term limits? Should we term them out so they can't be there for a life term?
I don't think term limits are going to do us any good, because as long as money rules, they're
going to be replaced. How can we get them out of there?
Well, it all goes back to organization. There's only one thing that's more powerful than money in this country, and that's when you got large numbers of people that are concerned and organized and working towards common goals. And in my opinion, that's the whole thing that we got to be concerned about doing in this country right now. Without that, I mean, we're literally sunk. We're up the creek without a paddle, you know. And there is not going to be a return to any kind of decency in this country for a real long time if we let this continue much longer. We're giving up our rights left and right. We could read through the Bill of Rights right now and people would say, we don't have that right. You know, all those rights have been taken away. If you just look at the amendment here, the Fourth Amendment, the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. We see every one of those things violated in Boston this past week.
Every one of them.
Everyone
in that community, their rights as a community, their rights were violated. The whole community.
There should be a massive class action lawsuit against what happened in Boston. The bombing was bad, but the way the police abused their powers and the arrogance and what they put people through was as bad as the bombing itself. There could have been a whole lot of people hurt very bad and very seriously with what the police were doing there in Boston.
Well,
it would have just taken one person holding the Constitution up and say, hey, I've got these rights under the Bill of Rights. What are you trying to do to me? And, you know, before you know it, some cop starts slapping somebody around and somebody ends up getting shot.
Right. Ellen, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining our program. I'll look forward to having you back on 2 weeks from now. You always bring a lot of interest to our program, and with your plethora of information and your background in social activities, being a long-time communist. I look forward to having you join us again in 2 weeks. Ellen, how can people reach you?
They can call me at 218-386-2432 or just do a Google, Alan Mackey, and you'll come to my blog and all my contact information is there.
Thanks again, Alan. We look forward to having you back on 2 weeks from now. And once again, we'd like to thank you for joining the Socialist Insight. You can reach me by going on the Internet and searching for StuartAlexanderCares.com, StuartAlexanderCares.com, and go to the contact section and post whatever your concerns are or questions, and we will also direct those to our guests. Once again, Ruth Ann Martefio, we appreciate her sponsoring this program. We look forward to having you to join the Socialist Insight once again next week. Thanks again, Alan.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And my apologies to everybody if you got blasted out. Blog Talk has fixed the chat room problem, it looks like. However, they haven't fixed the soundboard all the way. So, my apologies. You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Are back. I'm Ruth Anna Martefio, and my guest is your host of the Research Rabbit Hole. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Ruth Anna. How are you?
I am good. It's good to have you back.
Great to be back.
We were telling the audience before that last week, because Blog Talk was hacked for prime time, we didn't do any shows Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday because we couldn't get in. And you know, so you weren't on Monday, and then we couldn't get in the rest of the week, so it was one of those weeks. But
Oh, wow.
Most things are back. Tonight the chat was iffy, but it seems okay, and we're just having a problem with the music. So hopefully they'll get that changed right away. But tonight we are talking more about 9/11, and I just... Tell us how you got so interested, because you've done so much research, Cynthia. How did you get so into this particular issue?
Well, I've told the story a couple of times, but I was actually a grad student in New York City, and my getaway place, the place that I would go to kind of get away from studying and all these classes and stuff like that, was the World Trade Center. And, you know, it had the most unbelievably gorgeous view that you can imagine, looking out and seeing the Statue of Liberty and the boats, you know, circling it. And it was just, it was so picturesque. And from an artistic standpoint, I just fell in love with that building. And I loved going up there. It was something that I almost did every weekend, and anytime I would have a friend that would come in town, that would be the exact spot that I would take them first. We would go there, and then we would go to South Street Seaport and, you know, to a couple of restaurants and stuff like that. So it was one of my very favorite places. So the day of 9/11, I mean, I took that very personally. That building was like my playground. So when that came tumbling down, I was like, you know, I was given a vision and was given this whole thing about King Kong on top of the Empire State Building, like fighting off jets. And so when I saw that, my intuition was basically trying to get a hold of me and just say, hey, you know, this was a staged event. Look at this as if it were a movie. It was basically staged. So I was given that information in like a flash, and it was just, you know, one of those things I couldn't get out of my mind. So I knew that this, you know, there was more to the story than what we were actually seeing on our, you know, TV stations and hearing on the radio and all the news that was coming out. I knew that there was something more to the story. And so it haunted me. It was one of those things. Basically, I had insomnia before 9/11, but after 9/11, I hardly slept at all. I mean, it was one of those things where I was up, you know, all the time. And then about probably 6 years into it, I had had a dog bite, and I thought that I was basically dying from this dog bite, because the infection from the dog bite had gone from my thumb, where I was initially bit, up my hand and then up my arm, and it was like covering my whole body. I even had like stuff going on in my leg, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like dying. And so the last thing that I wanted to do, because I felt like, look, this is it, you know, I may die this week. So what I did was I got on the internet, and I was like, you know, I want to get to the bottom of 9/11. I want to find out what's going on with this and what really happened. And so I just started Googling, and I Googled and Googled like crazy. And sure enough, I found Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth with Richard Gage. And lo and behold, he was speaking in San Diego in like 2 weeks. And so I actually got to see him. I sat on the very front row. I sat right in the front seat. I got to see him. And I was so impressed with his, you know, his presentation. And I got to see all of his videos before that. I pretty well knew everything almost by memory because I'd seen it so much. But by the time I saw him, like, you know, 2 weeks later in person, it was riveting. It was incredible to actually see all the videos that he had and the demonstration that he did and to actually, you know, talk with other architects and engineers and people in the design field who knew that these buildings did not just fall in 15 seconds each due to a fire, which was reported by the mainstream news, you know?
Right. Well, that's it. We've seen pictures of several skyscrapers that had fires, and none of them collapsed. They were either later taken down. Most of them were just repaired, and people went on. There was a lot of funny stuff. Why do you think, is it pure denial that so many people who in many ways seem to be quite intelligent just refuse to face the facts about 9/11? Is it denial?
Well, there's so much to it, Ruth Ann. I think for one, someone has to get to a point where they're really open to questioning what really went on. And, you know, I'm one of those people, I wasn't satisfied with my parents' answer on Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and, you know, the Easter Bunny. It was like, they lied about this, you know what I mean? So I was already questioning stuff from the get-go. I was like, you know, why did they lie about the Easter Bunny? You know, why was this big deal about Santa Claus going on? So I never really trusted anything. So there was that kind of part of me going. But my other friends who have questioned this also, and there's a great following with the 9/11 Truth Movement. So for those that don't know about it, Your local area would have typically a 9/11 truth group, or in most major cities. I know that Richard Gage just did a 36-city tour. So there's probably a city very near you that's really into the study of this and finding out more information. And I've met some fabulous people, some really smart people, and you know, people who are architects, engineers, pilots, all sorts of people, counselors. There's some awesome people in this, filmmakers. So, you know, I've met some really cool people with this. And, you know, we're all in the rabbit hole looking weekly, you know, daily, nightly. We're all emailing each other and you know, sending each other the latest and greatest video and everything that's come out. So it's been a passion, and it's something that I feel every American should, you know, actually be interested in, because this is something that greatly affects our life on planet Earth, you know. So it's really important that people do their homework, I feel like, you know.
If you can't, you know, trust your government on something like this, what should you be able to trust them on? Like nothing? And I'd like to mention that a lot of these people who've done the research, I've seen lots of videos by people who are not American. But they're, again, they're engineers, they're architects, and they have studied it. And they say this could not have been the way it was told to us.
Yes, I agree. I mean, you know, just the sheer fact that those buildings fell in, you know, 15 seconds each, that completely defies every known law of physics. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it took literally like 4 to 5 minutes just to go from the lobby level all the way up to the penthouse floor where Windows of the World restaurant was. So you can imagine the mass. Those buildings were tremendously large, you know, so for them to fall in 15 seconds, that's absolutely crazy, you know, and for them to pull this over as a fire, you know, they actually did some type of nerd video that came out on TV recently where they had like five, physics students and I think one vet tech who actually won the thing. But they wound up doing a ball drop where the ball dropped and it was supposed to break through levels of glass, and you could actually see the ball dropping, and they were all supposed to calculate exactly how many floors this would drop through. And you know, it was designed to demonstrate that there would be a complete falsity, that the buildings would have actually, you know, come down all the way down like they did without the use of some type of explosive. So it was a really good video. If you can pull that up, I think that you just have to look up, go to YouTube and then pull up Nerds 9/11 or something, and you'll probably find that video.
Okay, Nerd 9/11. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I love the title. So, something that people don't seem to address too much is just that dust. Just dust. Everything was pulverized, which doesn't seem quite right either. When a building falls, you have big chunks of it.
Yes.
And here it was all pulverized, except, so funnily, they found an ID, right, of one of these 19 terrorists.
in good condition. Yeah.
You know, this kind of stuff, it is just, it would be such a bad movie, but it all happened, and just not the way we were told. Did you read about the red chips?
I'm not familiar with that. Well, can you explain part of it? Maybe I've heard it under a different name or something.
I think I sent it to you. There was a wonderful video, about 45 minutes, I'll find it, where a man here in this country talks about the how he and, well, some separate labs. Actually, he was put on administrative or whatever they would call it in a college leave at BYU, and then he retired the next year. This was, I think, in 2006, because he had come out and started writing papers and talking about 9/11. The official story, you know, pretty much sucked. But he had been sent some of the that dust.
Oh, like the nanoparticle dust?
Uh-huh. And they had, it was red chips in there. And he goes on into talking about what this is. And it's just, you know, it will blow your mind. It's, this is just nothing like we were told. But there's a lot of, I forget what it is that has combined. I think it was aluminum and something combined.
It's a nanoparticles, nanothermite and nanothermate is like an explosive that they use in the incendiary process to explode a building.
And all of this. But you can actually see under the microscopes, you know, some of this red. But he was there again. He talked like you did about the time and how the buildings just came down so perfectly, like the explosions we've seen videos of. Oh, Las Vegas casinos or other buildings that were exploded. And when you put one of them right by the side of the World Trade Center, and then Building 7, which most people in this country, believe it or not, they don't know what Building 7 was.
Right.
Would you want to explain the third building that went down that day?
Sure. Building number 7 was a building that was a part of the World Trade Center complex and was built a few years after the World Trade Center. The two towers of the World Trade Center were around 111 stories tall, and they were built by the Rockefellers in and around the late 70s. And this building was built, it was 47 stories tall. So it was, in essence, taller than even the tallest building in downtown San Diego. And yet it fell in under 7 seconds without being hit by a plane. So a lot of people don't know that. I mean, this is absolutely silly. I mean, how do you have a building that's 47 stories tall that, you know, completely pancakes all the way from 47 stories down into its footprint within less than 7 seconds? I mean, it was 6.5 seconds. So it's unbelievable. And then they passed this whole thing off as just it collapsed. Well, right, I guess, and out of sympathy, you know, for the other two buildings or something, you know.
But well, they said that some parts of the World Trade Center, the two towers, like it something from there flew through the air and it hit that and it started a fire and it collapsed. However, the towers went down, what, 9 in the morning, and Building 7 was like 5 in the afternoon or something.
Right, like around 5:30 in the afternoon. So the timing of that was completely off, you know.
Totally crazy. But I know that there's, we were hoping that Rick Wilson would join us, and he may, but I know that there's 24 facts about 9/11 that are totally irrefutable, and that this is awful. Do you want to talk about some of those?
Well, I would like to start off talking about what I have found and what I uncovered after reading Christopher Belen's book called Solving 9/11, and it's basically false flag terrorism, which was a term that I had never heard of until I was at Richard Gage's seminar on 9/11. And basically, false flag terrorism occurs when elements within a government stage a secret operation whereby the government forces pretend to be a targeted enemy while attacking their own forces or people. The attack is then falsely blamed on the enemy in order to justify going to war against that enemy. And Wikipedia defines it as, the false flag operations are covert, meaning they're off the table, under the table, no one knows about them. They're conducted by governments, corporations, and or organizations, which are designed to deceive the public in such a way that the operations appear as if they are being staged and carried out by other entities. The name is derived from the military concept of flying false colors, that is, flying the flag of a country other than your own. A false flag operation is not limited to just war and or counterinsurgency operations, and they have been used in peacetime, for example, during Italy's strategy of tension. So this is one of those concepts that I had never heard of. A lot of people can't even conceive of this, but this is probably one of those things that's listed in The Art of War, you know, the book that is so famous and everything. But it's basically a situation where it's a covert operation. People don't know about it. If you go to the movie, and I hope everyone would watch this because it's really an awesome documentary, it's called Loose Change, an American Coup, COUP. Sometimes I have trouble saying that word. People don't know what I'm saying, but it's an American coup. The Nazis set fire to their own parliament during World War II, or right before World War II. And this is a hard word for me to say, but I'll try to spit it out anyway. The Reichstag. Is that how you pronounce it?
I'll let you pronounce it. I'm not good with it.
I'd have probably really botched that one up. But the Reichstag building was basically, set fire. They set fire to it. It was their own parliament, and they blamed that fire on some people to take the fall. And so basically this was a way to push through their legislation and to, you know, enact new laws and put things into effect that were not accessible until they staged this false flag operation. So if you look at that, you can see the direct parallel with 9/11 and the fact that the that there was this huge Patriot Act bill that was already in place. They had already written this thing. It was over 360 pages long. They didn't just manifest this thing in 3 weeks after 9/11. This thing was already good to go. It was already drafted and ready to roll. So, I think people need to know this, and it's not like it's not a fact. People can do their homework, and they can actually see there are some serious dots to be connected here. This is not just some type of, you know, airy-fairy concept. This is like a major issue, and people need to know what's going on, you know? And then we have this recent issue with, of course, the Boston Marathon massacre and the Texas fertilizer plant that both happened within the same day or two that they were passing the CISPA through.
Exactly.
And the Senate was signing that thing. So,
yeah.
I mean, what are the odds of that?
Pretty much zilch. I wanted to also mention Oklahoma bombing, which that's been on my mind lately, too. Well, you know, the Oklahoma bombing and the Waco, not the fertilizer plant, but Waco, David Koresh and all that, which that wasn't a false flag. I mean, that was just a pure massacre. But, you know, there's so many things that we've observed, like the Oklahoma bombing. You know, these patsies, these two young men in Boston, patsies, it's amazing how the government has, they have the wherewithal. I guess they've got so much money and everything. And I'm not saying the whole government, like we've talked before, but some of the ABC agencies, they do these things. Recently, the FBI had, in California, I think it's been within the last couple months, there was again a young man of maybe diminished mentality or anyway easily swayed who had been set up by the FBI, you know, to do some bombing. Of course, the bomb didn't work, and the FBI got him. Well, it was no problem getting him because they set him up.
And man.
You know, so this is not uncommon. And if we think that these agencies wouldn't have done something like Boston, then we're really in denial.
And if we go back all the way back to the JFK assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald was actually Dr. Mary Sherman's personal bodyguard. He was an ex-Marine who was hired to escort her to and from her apartment, back and forth to and from that lab in a very secretive operation that was going on dealing with the vaccinations, which led to a lot of soft cancer tissues. So there was like an explosion of soft cancer tissue cells and that type of thing that happened as a result of the vaccinations that came out in 1958 through 1963. And rather than pull all of that, the United States government issued 198 million rounds of that, the vaccinations that went out to the entire population and basically exposed that entire generation to an explosion of soft cancer tissue growth. So if you go to the interviews with Ed Halcyon, you'll see that. And that's the book title that he wrote. He wrote Dr. Mary's Monkey. And that's the two interviews that I heard were just absolutely baffling. They make 9/11 look like it's not even a story, because when I was listening to that, I was like, oh my gosh, what a convoluted story this is. You know, it's called Dr. Mary's Monkey. You've got to listen to that. And George Norrie interviews Ed Halcyon, and so does Alex Jones, and they're both awesome interviews. You've got to listen to that. Very incredible.
Right. So we know that it's not unusual for not only this government, but other governments and their agencies to do these kind of things. These flags just go ahead and expose, if not just flat out murder, you know, hundreds of people. We're just experiments.
Yes, that was a big eye opener. I had about a week or two of just serious thought after that. I was needing a serious break from the internet those 2 weeks. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I uncover with this? You know. So, if people haven't seen that yet or listened to those interviews, that's mind boggling. You know, for sure.
So, you want to get into these 24, we probably won't cover them all, but some, the ones that you think are the most important, irrefutable evidence?
Yes. Let me find those. I'm looking right now on my tabs. Let's see. I would also like to mention that Christopher Boleyn has done a really good job on the terror drills that became real. If you go to Chapter 6, The Terror Drills That Became Real, on 9/11, the London bombings and the sinking of the Estonia, which was the ship in the Baltic Sea, you're going to see a whole eyeful of stuff that went on that, you know, kind of goes over this false flag stuff and the fact that the government and the media are both complicit within this whole thing. It's like the media plays out their role by not telling the whole truth and basically ignoring the fact that there were exercises run, either military drills or exercises that were run in each one of these instances, exactly like the Boston Marathon massacre. The very day of that, they were running a bomb drill with the bomb-sniffing dogs at both the finish line and the starting gate of that thing. So if people put, you know, two and two together and look and connect the dots here, they were running a military exercise or some type of a drill or exercise that day that allowed them to carry out this type of atrocity. So, you know, if people could just see the big picture and connect this, and if enough people knew about it, they would have to stop this. You know, they couldn't pull this stuff off. If enough people wake up and realize each time they have one of these terror drills that actually goes live, this is basically something, this is major, you know, and people should be doing cheerleading herkies on this, and there should be a band, you know, parading around or something, because this is major, you know. I can't imagine that people have not put all this together, but no one is being told. Our press is not telling us this. It's completely ignored by our media. So that's why all of this is so important, you know.
Right,
Roseanne? Back me up here.
There's a man named David Laurie Vanderbeek who is running for governor of Nevada in 2014. And he has a lot of things on YouTube. And he's not only skeptical as we are about the Boston bombings, but he also has some video of something that looks suspiciously like a rocket coming into the fertilizer plant in Texas.
And oh, my gosh. I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen two videos of that, and then I even went back. I'm one of those analytical people. I had to just hear it for myself. So I went back and I listened to it, and this is the audio track is in sync, too. It's not just that, you know, that there were two random videos that came out, but if you listen to the exact sound of it, it's identical to what somebody else posted on my Facebook page, an identical sound to an incoming bomb in Afghanistan or Iraq. So they're basically showing you the exact sound and what it looks like when a real bomb, you know, is touching ground. So it's identical if you look at the two tracks. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, I feel like I'm living in some kind of a bad movie. Frequently, I get that feeling. Okay, this is the real world, though. You know, you're not going to wake up because you are awake. That's why you feel this way. But
yeah, there's a lot going on.
Did you find the list?
Yes, I did. The list is actually 24 hard facts about 9/11, and it's to basically generate awareness and acceptance, and that, you know, people really need to know the facts. And these are all complete facts. They're irrefutable. So number one is the fact that nanothermite was actually found in the dust at Ground Zero. So they found this. It's within the, you know, microscopic dust that was left within the, you know, all the dust. So this is irrefutable. And number two, there were 1,700 and are 1,700 engineers and architects which support a real independent 9/11 investigation led by Richard Gage, the founder. So this is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and you can look this up on A&E. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth .com. So they have a ton of great videos on that, and I highly recommend that you look at that and see all of the evidence that they have. And they actually have two or three movies out now, documentaries. One is Experts Speak Out, which I saw the preview of in L.A. and the Beverly Hills area, and that's awesome. There's about 2.5 hours of interviews with top-level architects and engineers all speaking out on the fact that these buildings did not fall due to a fire. They actually fell due to explosive evidence found in the incendiary evidence of this dust. So I recommend that everyone watch that. Experts Speak Out. You can find that very easily on YouTube, and it's completely free. You can pull it up immediately and watch it. Just grab some popcorn and watch. So it's really good.
I've been eating popcorn lately, Cynthia. Watching a
lot.
Oh,
you gave up popcorn, huh?
Well, you know, like you say, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there. We should be watching it. So, yeah, it's popcorn time a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely popcorn time. And then number three on this list is the total collapse of World Trade Center number 7. This is the third building that went down in 6.5 seconds at basically free fall acceleration. This is like, bam, you know. This thing just comes down in 7 seconds without being hit by a plane. I mean, so how can you explain this?
Yeah.
Without being hit by anything, you know. It's unbelievable. And not only that, but this building housed the mayor's office of the city of New York City, as mm-hmm. well as the FBI and the CIA. And guess which evidence was stored in that building?
Which evidence was stored there?
Do you remember the leading news story that was happening right the month before 9/11? That I mean, I heard that name so much I could just vomit. Do you remember the name?
I don't remember the name. You're not talking about Osama, because he wasn't brought up until this happened.
No. This was the Enron case. The Enron evidence was actually in building number 7.
Okay. No, I thought it was like,
there you have it.
Enron, definitely, yeah.
Enron and WorldCorp. So both of those cases, the evidence was contained in that building. So a coincidence.
Well, remember the Pentagon, the part that got hit, it had the records that, you know, we had just found out that there was so much money that they couldn't find.
Yeah.
And then sudden the next day that area of the Pentagon is blown.
Yes.
It's you know, coincidence. No, things are not coincidental, I don't think.
No. Yeah, that was the missing $2.3 trillion that Rumsfeld had announced the very day before 9/11. So that one wing had been secured for fire safety or something, as well as the two World Trade Center buildings. And that's exactly where those planes flew in, the alleged planes.
Yeah, the alleged planes,
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh. I mean, but it's one of those things where after you review the story over and over and over again, it just, you know, some of these things are just really silly, you know, when you think about them. Like, how could we really believe this? How did they pass this by our public? Why wasn't somebody aware? Why didn't they question this, you know?
And when we laugh, we're not laughing at the horrendous act itself. Are all the people who were killed, the families that were affected, we're not laughing at that.
No.
But just the fact that we, for so long as a nation, have had our heads up our asses over this.
Yes.
It's amazing that some people still do.
Yeah, a lot of people are just not open to hearing it, and then a lot of people have not been exposed to it. So
it's too scary.
There's a lot going on with that, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Now, number 4 is Dick Cheney was in command of NORAD on 9/11 while running war games, and there were actually 5 different war games that were being run that pulled all of these planes and all of our military off base. They weren't even in and around the Washington, D.C. area or the New York area. They were flown off way off course. And then Dick Cheney ordered a stand still, like a still stand, basically, to a young officer that came into the office right when Norman Mineta was in the office, and he basically gave an order to shoot down in flight 93. So during the NORAD drill exercises, so there was all this stuff going, and this is clearly documented in the testimony that was given for the commission report with Norman Mineta. So if you want to look that up, you can look up Norman Mineta on YouTube and actually find out how he says that and what his testimony consisted of. It's all on YouTube. Now, number five is 6 out of the 10 commissioners believe the 9/11 commission report was set up to fail. And there were, you know, this is a lot of people, 6 out of 10. There were only 4 people that actually bought this thing. And then 6 of them were saying this is a bunch of hogwash, basically.
Right. But,
you know, so that was another issue. And then we have number 6. The FBI confiscated 84 to 85 videos from the Pentagon. And, you know, of course, none of these were open. They had frames missing. They had footage from the Sheraton Hotel, the DoubleTree, and Sitco. And yet no one has seen these videos. They were released, and no one has seen them, the security cameras. So that's very sketchy. And this is a fact. This is something that's irrefutable.
Right.
Number 7. Osama bin Laden was not wanted by the FBI for the 9/11 attacks. He was not even wanted. Can you believe that?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that's
but
just
yet
crazy.
They mentioned him immediately. It was terrorists. It was Middle Eastern terrorists. It was radical Muslims, and it was Osama bin Laden. That was so fast within, you know, the first few hours. They already had it all figured. Yeah, right.
Yes, and then, of course, if you read Philip Marshall's book, The Big Bamboozle, you're going to find out on, like, page number 75 that bin Laden basically died of Marfan's disease in 2001. So
yes,
if you're wanting to do your homework on that, it's in Philip Marshall's book, The Big Bamboozle, page 75. And that's a big aha. That man was killed with his 2 children and family dog in their house and estate in the northern L.A. area or around L.A. So that was very unfortunate, but there's a reason probably why they killed him, and it was because he had written a book that, you know, disclosed that the whole bin Laden thing was a complete hoax, and
right,
that the man died in 2001. And his third book was coming out on that, and he was killed several months before the release of that.
Well, the whole thing when, you know, Obama's popularity, not that it's that great now, but it was waning, and so, of course, he had to find bin Laden, and they went to Pakistan and did whatever, and threw somebody at sea, supposedly. And then within just a couple weeks, those 24 SEALs that had something to do with this were, strangely enough, killed in a helicopter crash.
Yeah, that was crazy.
You know, and people, though, they were believing that bin Laden had been caught. And it's like,
right,
you know, he's been dead for 10 years. what is wrong here? But, yeah.
Yeah, and now the new movie that came out, people assume that they're getting the whole scoop on this whole story, which is basically false. So, you know, I talked to a couple the other night out, and they were so convinced with that movie, like, this is how it really played out. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you need to look at these look at these YouTubes and see the big picture here before you immediately assume that Hollywood has given you a factual, you know, report on this whole thing, you know. Okay, and then we have number 8 here, which is hundreds of firefighters and witness testimony to bombs and or explosions, which were completely ignored by the 9/11 Commission report. And this is also listed in the Toronto hearings by a guy named Graham, G-R-A-E-M-M-E, I believe. And this is a profound speech that he gives. He was a Harvard graduate and goes on and on and on about all this eyewitness testimony of key people who were first response firemen or other people who were there at the scene of the, you know, 9/11, who reported hearing bombs go off in the building and all surrounding that area. So that's very important testimony, and people should listen to that. It's incredible. Also, Barry Jennings' testimony is in that, as well as William Rodriguez. So giving eyewitness reports of firefighter explosions on in the lobby and sublevels of the World Trade Center building. So that's very important for people to see. Number 9, hundreds of firefighters and witness testimony to molten metal, which was completely ignored by the commission report. Now, people gave testimony and quotes like, this was running like it were in a foundry, like molten metal, like red-hot molten metal oozing out the building. And this does not happen unless there's some type of incendiary reaction going on with something like thermate or thermite or something like that. So this is something that I've heard from Richard Gage's reports and the movie and everything. This is in the movie Experts Speak Out. So if you want to get the whole scoop and poop on that, it's in that movie, Experts Speak Out, and I do recommend that highly. And then number 10, we have, oh, Ruthann, you're going to get this, the 5 dancing Israelis arrested in the Mossad truck bombs. They're out there celebrating the fact that these buildings were hit and struck by airplanes, and they're having such a great time that somebody notices them and calls the police on them. They're like the only 5 people that were arrested on the day of 9/11, and they hold them for 90 days, and they were held that whole entire time, and they gave the quote, we were there to document the event.
Yes, yes.
We were there to document the event. Like, what the heck? You know, if they had any sense, if they knew about this, why didn't they alarm everybody in those buildings not to go to work that day? If they were really, really on our team and really our ally, why the hell didn't they call us and tell us, don't go to work that day, you know? I'm sorry, I'm getting mad, but this
no,
is bullshit.
No,
excuse me.
Sorry, no, they're not on our team. But yet, you know, all these dual citizens and these people in Washington, they're paid off. They you know, they pledge their allegiance to Israel and they believe all this shit. But, yeah, no, of course they're not on our side. I mean, you know, they helped make this happen. Of course they were there to document it. So tell us, what happened after 90 days when they were cut loose?
Apparently they were just cut loose. I don't know the rest of that story, but I have seen that tape over and over and over again. Yeah. And they do have a translator explaining, we were there to document the event. And I mean, that's just crazy stuff. I mean, how on earth? And not only that, but there's also radio reports about these art students that were up in the upper floors of the World Trade Center that were basically excavating the floor. Like they had taken out 10 floors and somebody even fell through and actually died up there. And they were tossing out bodies, like fake bodies or something off the top levels of that floor and filming it with like a helicopter. So there were all these different things going on in that building before 9/11, as well as some type of huge electrical outage that happened the very weekend before 9/11. So people have not heard about this, but when you notice stories like they took away all the bomb-sniffing dogs, They shut down the whole building. They shut down all the electrical where no one had a recording device to see who was coming and going from there or what equipment was being taken out. And there was a complete electrical outage where no one even saw from the security cameras what was going on. There's more to the story. People need to realize there's a lot more going on to this, you know?
Yeah.
Now, here we go, number 11. On September 10th, 2001, Rumsfeld reported that $2.3 trillion were missing from the Pentagon. So this is something that's irrefutable. I don't know why he came forward like that. Obviously, this was an honest-type comment, because why else would he give himself away like that? I've thought about this. This has kept me up at night, wondering, why would this guy come forward and report $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon a day before 9/11? This is crazy. So I have to dismiss him, thinking, why would he be that stupid to just give himself away like that, you know?
I mean, and it wasn't like we were going to know one way or another, because we don't know what to do with the money anyway. So, yeah, 2.3. That was sort of strange for me, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's always been something. That's been a burr under my saddle, using a Texas saying, you know. I was like, what's that all about? What happened with that, you know? And then number 12, there was a situation with 220-plus senior military, intelligence service, law enforcement, and government officials question the official story. They question all of this stuff, the 9/11 whistleblowers, the patriots for 9/11. All of these different people have spoken up and have said, this whole thing is a bunch of hogwash. And it's labeled under patriotsquestion911.com, and there's a whole slew of 9/11 truth organizations, from the pilots to the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth to, scholars for 9/11 truth to, you know, any number of different groups who are now questioning 9/11 truth. So if you go on YouTube and you pull up different things, you'll see different videos. You can find different sites, different organizations to join. So there's a ton of people who all question 9/11, and people in really high positions. My local 9/11 group that meets, we have a guy who was head of the Apollo missions. He was, for 35 years, he worked for NASA, and he's very smart, brilliant guy, and he's at all of our meetings typically, sipping coffee there with us. And then we've got a commander, you know, who is in charge of different elements of the Air Force, and then a lieutenant commander, and, I mean, all sorts of people who are questioning this that are brilliant people who are finally like, this is hogwash. People need to really look at this and see what's going on, you know. Number 13, the towers were built to withstand a Boeing jet. And a quote from one of the architects was, or a structural engineer was, I designed it for a 707 to hit it. This was Leslie Robertson, a World Trade Center structural engineer. So these buildings were built basically to have multiple impacts from jetliners. And the way that they had built it was almost like a pencil puncturing a screen netting. So that's been in several different videos, and people have explained that. So that's a very interesting fact to look at. And then number 14 is the history of American false flag attacks, which we have the USS Liberty, which was an Israeli attack on an American ship. Mm-hmm. Where over 35 people or so were killed. A number of people were, left injured, and this was a complete false flag operation attack. We have the Gulf of Tonkin. We have Operation Northwoods, which was a classified document, which is now declassified. So all of these things are facts. You cannot dispute this. It's actually available to look at all over the internet. You can pull this stuff up. The Oklahoma City bombing, if you pull up the movie A Noble Lie, you will see eyewitnesses reporting the fact that this official story of the Oklahoma City bombing was a bunch of hogwash. Like, they brought in two different teams of reporters. The first local reporting crew who was reporting this was actually reporting the truth. And then midstream, they bring in the National News Service, and then they go on to a completely different official story. So this completely parallels the exact story with the official story of 9/11. If you piece those two together, if you see A Noble Lie, that movie, which is available now on YouTube completely free in its full form, you can pull that up and watch it and see. There's a number of different facts in that that were not reported correctly, and people really need to do their homework and see that. Otherwise, they're really not going to get the capacity of 9/11, you know?
That's what I thought when I saw that. It was like, okay, if you ever had any doubts or questions, you need to see this.
Yes. Now, another part of this is something that we keep going back to, and we've gone over this every radio show that we've done with you. It's PNAC, P-N-A-C, which is Project for a New American Century. And they were basically calling for a new Pearl Harbor. They were wanting to rebuild America's defenses and head overseas on this mission and do their imperialistic efforts over there. So this whole thing was drawn up in, I believe, 1998, and if not 1997. So they now have it online. You can actually pull that Project for a New American Century, and you can see this whole outline of how they were wanting to instigate these overseas wars, and they needed a new Pearl Harbor, which was 9/11. 9/11 was the new Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So they pulled it off. Now, number 15 is the BBC correspondents. Jane Stanley reported the collapse of World Trade Center 7, the Solomon building, 20 minutes before this even fell. I mean, can you imagine? That was crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And then CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC also had early reports. So the two of these reported this building falling 20 minutes before it even fell. And then you have MSNBC and I believe CNN reporting the building's going to fall. And they've actually got reporters who are actually stating that. Then we have number 16, Flight 93. The debris was spread so far, like several miles. Cheney admitted to having to order down Flight 93 to shoot it down. And so this happened in Pennsylvania. And I've listened to a couple of lectures that Dwayne Dietz has done, the guy who's the 35-year retired guy from NASA. And he's claiming that there are actually two planes that had identical flight numbers on them that cross-sectioned each other, and one wound up going to one city and the other one wound up landing in Shanksville. And the one in Shanksville, the coroner was sent out and there were actually no people on that plane. There were no human remains. And folks, I grew up in the funeral business, so there would have been a trace of human remains if this plane actually had people on it, but there were no remains found whatsoever. So that's really crazy when you look at that, you know. Don't you think, Ruthann?
I think it's totally nuts, and that's true. I mean, we've never had any kind of, there was never a body part even found.
Not a single bone, not a single anything. I mean, so that whole thing was a Bermuda Triangle type issue or something, you know, a complete lie, a fabrication.
Yeah.
Okay. And then number 17, Bush hesitated for 441 days before starting the 9/11 Commission. A group of widows called the Jersey Girls actually pushed and pushed and pushed to actually have this go forward, and they finally started the commission review. But basically, they felt like, you know, this whole thing was kind of hogwash. It never really resulted in any of their questions being answered, and it was something that the widows were very upset about, the families were very upset about, and I stand with the families. I see, you know, what they're, you know, what they're talking about. But if you look at the commission report, they did not cover many of the issues that should have been handled.
And like you said earlier, the commissioners said that it was hogwash.
Oh, yeah.
They would see and hear, and just like Bush and Cheney, they testified not under oath, and they would only testify together kind of thing. And, you know, that was just stupid.
Yeah.
It was
There's
a waste
a lot
of time, money, that particular commission.
Right, and to use Rick's quote, you know, Rick Wilson, he said, you know, they spent more money on the stain on Monica Lewinsky's dress than
exactly.
they did on the whole commission report for 9/11. So
yeah.
compare it like that. That's really crazy. You know?
Really sad. Yeah.
And then we have number 18. The commission, the 9/11 commission, was given extremely limited funds. Only $15 million was given to investigate 9/11, whereas over $60 million was spent investigating Clinton's affairs with Monica.
Perspective, my dear.
Yeah. Okay, number 19, Bush said that he watched the first plane crash into the North Tower on TV before entering the classroom. The TV was obviously on, and he was informed about the second impact while reading My Pet Goat, which, you know, can you imagine, to the children? And then he remained for at least 8 more minutes while America was under attack. And not only that, I think he even stayed 30 minutes after that to do a photo op. So
yeah.
Who in their right mind does that?
That was totally, totally bizarre. Is, you know, you're the leader of this country in the free world, and it's been attacked, and you're going to finish reading a kid's story and stay for a photo op? Have you lost your friggin' mind?
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, that was too weird at the time, even. Yeah, either.
I mean, you know, it looks like if the country was really under a terrorist attack, he would know he's a prime target. I mean, they would have skedaddled him out of there. You know, all the security staff, everybody would have hustled him out of there, and
right.
he would have been long gone. You know?
Yeah, whether he wanted to go or not. I mean, they would have manhandled his butt out.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no, we've only got three minutes and, what, 7 more to go. 6. So you want to tell us?
Oh, so I've got to really cram this. Okay, let's see. Okay. Number 19, we just covered that about the – okay, here we go. Number 20, the Patriot Act was written before 9/11. So it was signed into law October 26, 2001. So this thing was already, you know, drafted and written. So that's amazing. And then we have number 21, Marvin Bush was the director of Securicom, which was in charge of the security of the World Trade Center, the United Airlines, and Dulles International Airport. All three were breached on 9/11. So if you want to look at the security mechanism, look to Marvin Bush. He was the director of Securicom. Now, number 22 would be, who killed John O'Neill? He's a former FBI task force agent investigating Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. He transferred into the Kroll Corporation to head the security just before 9/11. John O'Neill died in the towers. So this was another interesting fact. And if you look at mysterious deaths of 9/11, that video, there's over 20 people that died After the events of 9/11, all eyewitnesses or key people who had eyewitness testimony that all died. So that's an important fact. Number 23, insider trading based upon foreknowledge. These were called put options. And as early as August 6th, there were people who were betting that United and American Airlines would both be losing stock shares, or their stock would be declining. And so these people placed a put option to hold their investments. And they actually made over $15 billion or something during this. So maybe it's $15 million. Maybe I exaggerated. But do your homework on that. That'll give you something to look up. So see if I'm right or wrong. And then number 24, at least seven of the 19 listed hijackers are still alive, and they're somewhere either over in Europe or the Middle East. Now, how crazy is that?
I love that. When I saw some of them saying, I mean, some of them had never even been here, and then, you know, yeah, they're still alive and well. So 19 hijackers were not killed in this. And
no.
It's disgraceful right now what we're doing with Gitmo. And
yes,
and everything there, but we only have 15 seconds. So Cynthia, 10 seconds. Thank you so much, and you'll be back.
Thank you, Ruthann.
Next week. Yes, next week.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you letting us air this and trying to get this information out. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye bye. Good night.
Bye.